Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal, Özil. Marca Mesut Özil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo, Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español, marca Nacho Monreal. Pim, pam, pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, good morning to you.
Good morning to you too. It's here. The season has arrived.
The new era. A new beginning, a new dawn, a new... Well, nothing new about the result, but look, it's here and it is a new season and... I don't know. The game didn't perhaps go as well as we might like yesterday, but there still feels like something interesting and fresh and different and what have you. You know, even the fact that things didn't go as well as people might like in certain areas, I'm curious to see how Unai Emery is going. Wow, we've diven? What's the past tense?
Plunged.
Jumped straight into the football stuff here without any nonsense. But I'm really curious and interested to see what he does, because we kind of would have an idea of what Arsene Wenger would do in a situation like this. You know, he give the guys a bit more time, you know, give them a couple of games. It's, you know, start of the season, players are back late, blah, blah, blah. But I think we saw some signs yesterday that Unai Emery will react to things differently than Arsene Wenger would have, because, you know, let's face it, they are not the same person, which is an amazing thing to consider.
That was one of the most amazing things about yesterday, actually, the realization that they are different people. Even the sight of someone different in the dugout was quite odd. I mean, someone in the dugout, full stop, was a bit of a change from recent years. But, I mean, he wasn't even confined to his technical area, Unai Emery. He was well outside the bounds of it on several occasions. I think the fourth official sort of gave him a free pass because he was like, well, it's his first day. You know, he's overexcited. But he was very, as we were promised, he was very emotive and active on the sideline.
Yeah, he does like to shout instructions at his players and point. He does a lot of pointing, and we all know that that's what we've been missing over the last while, is shouting and pointing, because those are the
marginal gains.
Yes, exactly. But look, I suppose we might as well just get straight into it. I owe you some ham on Ruffles, because I think the bet we had a few episodes ago was that Bernd Leno would be the goalkeeper for our first game. I felt that having spent £22.5 million on a goalkeeper this summer, we would play him. But we didn't. We picked Petr Cech. First and foremost, what was your... I mean, were you surprised by that at all, even though you had predicted it a couple of weeks ago?
I wasn't enormously surprised. And I should probably say that earlier in the week, I heard a bit of a whisper that Leno hasn't been in the best of form on the training ground, that no one necessarily at the club was particularly convinced that he looked ready for the number one shirt. So I felt a little bit more confident than I had. I mean, it's a little bit alarming that potentially. but apparently that is the case. So I was feeling quite secure that those Ruffles were going to be heading my sweet, well, salty way.
Yeah.
I've always had a hunch that it might be Cech. I always felt like Leno felt like a buy who had to improve to be good enough to be our number one, and I still retain that opinion.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do we make of that then, given that Unai Emery has a very clear style of play that he wants his team to use? He wants to play out from the back. He wants to use his keeper in the build-up from the back. And we know that Petr Cech, for all his strengths, this isn't necessarily one of them. Cech was quite interesting on TV afterwards. I don't know if you saw. He said, you know, it was nice. You know, this was a nice change, a pleasant change for me to be able to play a bit. You know, I've always, or he said, in the past, I've worked with managers who just want me to kick it long. You know, know, no guessing as to which Jose Mourinho flavored manager he was talking about there. So I think he enjoyed it from that point of view, even if there were one or two, maybe three or four quite scary moments.
I was going to say, was it nice when he nearly just kicked it in his own net? I don't know how nice he felt right then.
No, that didn't necessarily feel nice. I did notice a question on this, actually. Dave Strauss, who's at Goodman underscore London, says, for pure comedy, you only live once type of thing. Was there any part of you that wishes Czech actually slid that one in off the post? Which I understand, but no, there is no part of me that wanted to see that. But it was very, very close. And I'm not even quite sure that was the most difficult pass he had to deal with on the day. I'm not sure what he was really doing there, but you know, we accept that. I think most of us would accept that that's not necessarily Czech's strength. So does that make you even more worried, form aside, that Leno, who is a goalkeeper perhaps more suited to that style of play, still hasn't forced his way into Unai Emery's reckoning for the first game of the season?
Yeah, I think it does a little bit. I mean, I'm sure we'll see him. I'm sure we'll see him in the Europa League. I'm sure we'll see him in the domestic cups. But clearly Emery thinks Cech is the better man to have in his 11. I don't know if that's just about his ability as a goalkeeper. I wonder if it's to do with his influence, his experience, you know, his role in the dressing room. Maybe that's part of Emery's thinking as well. But I actually thought Czech started pretty well yesterday. I mean, City came out the blocks really fast, and I thought he made a couple of decent saves early on. And I was thinking, oh, wow, he's really justifying his performance here. And it just seemed to me that his confidence really dipped after conceding the first goal, and maybe, you know, he wasn't quite at the same level from that point on.
Yeah. Well, hello, dogs.
There's dogs outside, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, look, I suppose it's going to take time for him to get used to playing that way. I think what was interesting as well a couple of times was the amount of passes that he got to his right foot. So that's something that the defenders are going to have to work on. And, you know, I have some sympathy for him and for the Arsenal team in general, because playing that new style of football against a team as good as Manchester City is really, really difficult, because they're so well organized. They know exactly what they're supposed to do. They've more or less perfected their own pressing game. You know, they know how to deal with a team that wants to play it out from the back. And that, on top of the fact that it's Unai Emery's first game, there are new tactics, there are new instructions. I don't want to be trite in any way here, but I do wonder as well if there are, you know, in these early stages, some communication issues as well, because his English isn't quite as good as it's going to be in a few months' time, which isn't to say that, you know, they don't understand exactly what they're doing, but the nuances perhaps might be lost a little bit along the way. You know, it was a really, really difficult game to start our season with.
It was, and that was sort of my big take out from the game, really, that it was a bit of a shame that we had to face City first, because, you know, Unai Emery is attempting to instill these new philosophies, these new ideas, and not only are they the worst person you could possibly have to do that against, but also footballers will do anything if they believe it'll get them results. So, you know, to have an easier opponent and maybe be like, look, what I'm teaching you, what I'm telling you to do has a tangible benefit. It does end up in victories. It does end up in points.
Yeah.
Would have been, I think, really beneficial for Emery. But to try and indoctrinate them to his way of thinking when it's, you know, really difficult and when they're not really getting much out of it is a tough ask. And the other thing to remember is that, you know, we look at the City side now and we say, wow, aren't they extraordinary? They play the ball out from the back. Their pressing is so coordinated. But it wasn't always thus. You know, when Pep first arrived, we all remember John Stones giving the ball away in his own third. We remember countless errors. Remember, you know, Claudio Bravo being the ridicule of the Premier League, not making similar mistakes to the ones Cech was making yesterday. There is a learning curve. And there is a risk, particularly early on, in adopting this kind of strategy. And we have to accept that, I think.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, look, the players have to buy into it. I think the fans have to buy into it as well. Because, you know, there was a moment, wasn't there, after about 40 minutes where there was a goal kick and for once Cech waved his teammates forward. And you know, there were cheers from the crowd because there is this I think this inherent part... Is that a cat as well now? Holy moly.
Yeah, it's a menagerie.
You've got a menagerie there. But there is a part, there is, you know, this fundamental risk-averse part of being a football fan where it's like, get rid! Just get rid of it! You know, don't play around with it at the back because you could be punished and you could inflict some damage on your own team because of that. You know, there were a couple of moments yesterday like that where I think the fans really have got to be patient. If this is the way Unai Emery wants to play, it's not going to be perfect in one game. It's not going to be perfect in 1 month. And it's probably, in reality, not going to be perfect in one season, although we should, as time goes on, see some development, see some progress during the course of this campaign. So I think fans have got to just be a little bit more patient with what Emery is trying to do. There was another moment with Cech as well before we move on. I think, you know, after he had that moment where... you know, he'd nearly put the ball in his own net and there were a couple of hairy moments. You know, there was some, I don't know if it was from the City fans or if it was from the Arsenal fans, but, you know, when he got the ball, there was a bit of like, ooh, you know, that kind of stuff. And he made a gesture to the crowd, I think. It was sort of like a wave. It was like, okay, fine, just shut the fuck up now. You know, I take this on board. It was my mistake, but don't fucking keep going on it, you know? And I think that's something that... I'm not sure that was necessarily a positive thing. I like the way that Cech dealt with that, though.
Yeah, I did. I mean, that was coming from very much where I was sat. I was sat behind Petr Cech's goal, and there were a lot of ironic cheers from the Arsenal fans, you know, when he caught the ball or when he managed to complete a pass, and in the build-up to him passing the ball. And I just thought that was a bit unnecessary, you know. I wonder if it came from people wanting to see the new man, wanting to see the goalkeeper. We all love a shiny new player. We all love a new signing. But I just felt that it wasn't really appropriate. No, Cech's, he's doing his best, isn't he? You know, I mean, ultimately, yeah, it's as new for him as it is for us. And he is a 36-year-old player trying to adapt to a new way of playing. Now, whether that is worthwhile, whether that will actually get anywhere, remains to be seen. But I feel like we need to be patient. We need to be behind him. I was a little bit alarmed to hear that, particularly so early on, because it's so clear, isn't it, that the manager... is trying to instill something new.
Yeah.
And we have to back him with that.
Exactly. Isn't that what people wanted? They wanted something new. They wanted a team that wasn't the same Arsene Wenger team. And to expect it to be perfect or to be, you know, brilliant from day one, especially against a team like City, is just unrealistic. You know, these are guys, a lot of these guys have played under Arsene Wenger for years. Is, you know, they've got to learn new things, new habits, new automatisms, all that kind of stuff. And the best way to learn it, regardless of what they do on the training pitch, is going to be in games. And I think they need the fans behind them and to understand what it is that they're trying to do. You know, so... you know, there were some players who weren't necessarily at the races yesterday, but that's a different thing. I just think in terms of the overall style of play, if this is what Emery wants, we've got to give him a chance, and the players have got to be given a bit of time and understanding and not necessarily heap pressure on them. I know it's a human reaction, isn't it? It's a normal human reaction. I remember City fans were going crazy in Pep's first season when players were getting caught on the ball. They were, you know, they took some time to buy into it as well. But I think maybe there's a lesson to be learned from that, you know, we could be a little bit more understanding because it's a system, it's a style of play that demands a lot of concentration. It demands near perfection when it comes to your passing and your decision making. And a lot of those things come from doing those things over and over and over again and knowing where your teammates are going to be. And in the first game of the season, you know, it's clear that wasn't the case for a number of those players.
Do you think, though... I mean, I'm with you, and I think we need to show patience and, you know, if this is what Emery believes in, great. But do you think there's a case that maybe this wasn't the opponent to suddenly decide, well, this is what we're going to do 100% of the time? Like, was there a case that maybe against City we might have been a bit better off going longer at times?
Maybe, yeah, yeah.
It's difficult, but what I'm saying is I know that there's a balance to be struck, I suppose, but yeah. While Emery clearly feels this is integral to the way he wants to play, we also, one of the things we want a manager is someone who adapts to the opposition themselves. And I just wonder if, given that they press so hard at the pitch, if we'd gone a bit longer, a bit earlier, we might have had a little bit more joy.
Maybe.
It's a difficult one, that, isn't it?
It is, yeah, because how do you teach your players to play in that way if you don't play in that way? You know, I do take your point. It is, it's a difficult balancing act. There must have been times when the Arsenal players and even Emery himself would have liked perhaps the team to be a bit more direct and to go longer. Maybe you can catch City out. I think we did a few times, but City are so well organised. They won pretty much everything at the back. We didn't offer very much in the final third anyway. And it's not like we have a player like Olivier Giroud who we can fire long balls to and he can hold them up and bring players into it. So, yeah, you know, I think if it was a criticism of Arsene Wenger that he didn't adapt tactically to other teams, it was only a criticism in the second half of his reign. It certainly wasn't a criticism in the first half when he was winning games and bringing success. And I think most coaches have a desire to play the way they want to play. Emery has it, Guardiola has it. Did Guardiola change his system just because people were a little bit antsy?
Uncompromising.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you've got to give these guys the room to do what they feel is the right thing to do, even if it goes against what you think might be the right thing to do. This is a long-term thing for Emery. It's not a short-term thing. So it's about putting those things in place for the longer term. So, yeah, maybe you could be a little bit more conscious of the opposition, but maybe it's also when you play this way against a team as good as Manchester City, there's a lot you can learn from it. There's a lot to learn from playing against a team who can nullify you in that way. So you've got to find solutions, and you can look at that game and say, well, look, they did this, so what can we do in those circumstances if you encounter that again? You know, you can't just play a video game on easy, you know, and win and think you're great at the video game. You've got to beat the hard bosses as well, if that makes sense.
That's true. And one of the things I learned watching this is, well, I wonder if that's why Shkodran Mustafi's been kept around the club, because he's one of the few defenders we have on the books who's able to play a forward pass, really, an effective forward pass between the lines. Because although Cech is getting a lot of stick, I felt like it was the second pass, really, that was the problem for Arsenal. You know, we could knock it about between the centre-halves and the goalkeeper just about okay, but the issue was we couldn't really see a way forward often from there. And I think that's partly the passing ability of the defenders we have, but also the responsibility of the midfielders to offer movement to show in space and create those lines.
Midfield was an issue yesterday, I think.
What a big call it was huge, to start Matteo Guendouzi.
Huge. I mean, he's rewarding him for his pre-season. He picked him ahead of £26 million Lucas Torreira, who, in fairness, only came back to the club last week, so maybe he's a little bit behind in terms of his physical preparation. We have to bear all those things in mind when we look at a manager's decisions, although Granit Xhaka came back at the same time and he started the game, so it was a big, big call. It really was. And at times I felt sorry for Guendouzi because, you know, he tried really hard. He didn't give up. There were things that went wrong for him and he didn't let his head go down. I liked that during a break in play. At one point he went over to the touchline to talk to Unai Emery, perhaps to get some instruction to say, look, what do I do here? How do I cope with this? You know, this is Manchester City. And from that point, he seemed to grow a little bit in confidence. That was about midway through the first half, if I remember correctly. So whatever Emery said to him there and whatever he took on board seemed to work. But there were moments where you could see this is a guy who played in League Two last season. He's 19 years of age. This is a huge step up in level. And it's not his fault that things were difficult for him in there. You know, with the best will in the world and with the greatest of support, it would have been difficult for him at times against a team as good as Manchester City stepping up to the Premier League. I don't think there's anything wrong in saying that. It's not being critical of him to say that either. You know, he wasn't good for the goal, although he wasn't the only one. We might touch on the goals now in a second. And there was that mistake in the second half where he let Aguero through, totally misjudged the ball, the flight of the ball that went under his foot. Aguero should have scored or should have squared it to De Bruyne. But in the context of the game yesterday, there was a lot to like about what he did and how he did it, even if you can see that he is a player who's got a huge amount to learn at this level.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised. I was at the game yesterday, and I didn't have access to, you know, the internet or Twitter or anything like that. And I watched Guendouzi play, and I liked him. I thought, you know, I like him as a prospect. I think he is a really promising young player, and he looks like a really interesting signing. I was surprised when I jumped online and saw him receiving quite a lot of praise from the Arsenal fan, not, you know, for being sort of outstanding on the day. And I think while elements of his character were outstanding and he really stood up to the task well, I mean, I don't think he was great. Like, I think he struggled, as all our midfielders did.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a bit of maybe, I don't know, it feels like there's almost like, because he's new, because he's young, we're sort of giving him the benefit of the doubt, which I sure appreciate.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. But I think he's got a long way to go. I mean, you mentioned the first goal. I felt he was beaten too easily on the first goal. If you look at the second goal, he gets beaten very easily high up the pitch as well and then caught out and doesn't get back. And yeah, he nearly gave away a third goal to Aguero. So I do think we need to sort of temper our collective excitement about this player. And I think that in we've seen with players in the past, particularly in the kind of defensive third of the field, it can be as dangerous for them to be putting over their head early as it can be positive.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought he was all right.
Yeah, but
I'm not looking at him going,
sure,
you're better than the established internationals necessarily.
Well, you know, I think he played better than them. That's the thing that was evident yesterday. Despite the flaws in his game and despite the how raw he is, you would have to say, and I would say it, that he was better than Xhaka. He was better than Ramsey.
Xhaka yesterday, yeah.
He was better than Henrik Mkhitaryan. You know, so these experienced internationals who really should have been providing him with the support that he needed as a midfielder weren't there. Xhaka was really poor. Mkhitaryan was more or less invisible. As the game went on, he became more and more invisible. Ramsey was clearly instructed to press very high up to lead the Arsenal press from the centre forward position. We assume that that's the instruction, but you know, he had some nice moments, I thought, Ramsey. There was a moment in the first half where he created something quite dangerous. We didn't do an awful lot of that. So there were some positives to Ramsey's game, but in general, you know, he didn't have a great game. So I think in the context of the performances of those guys, to see Guendouzi, you know, at least take on the responsibility of trying hard and working hard. And I think that's the ethic that Unai Emery likes, isn't it? You know, that's, I think, why he was rewarded with a start. You might question the decision on one level, because it is such a big step up and it is such a big gulf in quality between League Two and the teams he was playing in Manchester City. So I get, like, the manager's got some faith in him and wanted to perhaps reward him for a good preseason and to show that there's like a meritocracy at the club. Performances will get you in the team. If you work hard, you've got a chance to make it in the team. But, you know, it goes back perhaps to that other question. Do you have to temper some of your principles for what might be a more solid, a more stable midfield if you put someone like Mohamed Elneny in there, you know, or Lucas Torreira. So, you know,
I don't understand why Elneny's quite so out of favour with the fans at the moment. I feel like Elneny had a really good second half to last season and we lost him to injury
Is he out of favour with fans?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I can only go on the basis of, you know, my little echo chamber. But when I picked my predicted team to face City, I thought it would be Elneny in alongside Xhaka. I didn't think Guendouzi would play. I didn't think Torreira would play either. I didn't think he would be deemed ready.
Mm.
But the amount of people who said, not Elneny, how can you put Elneny in there? And I was like, oh, I thought last season we thought Elneny was one of our most improved players. We gave him a new contract. Everyone said we were happy about it. He deserved it. And when I look at Guendouzi, I think, yeah, really good character, really good prospect. But I struggle to see that right now he's better than Elneny. And I feel like I'm going to take pelters for that.
Well, based on what we've seen, I mean, I think, you know, there is this, you made the point that he's new and he's young and that with it brings a certain amount of understanding and forgiveness. And people want the nice new thing to be good and everything else. And I really hope he is. You know, there was a lot to like about what he did yesterday. But also, let's be realistic about where he's at in his career right now. And is he ready to play Premier League games against the champions, knowing already that it's going to be a very difficult game? You know, he did absolutely did his best. You know, there's no taking that away.
A bit of the what we could call the Mavropanos effect. You know, somebody comes in, we don't know anything really about them as a player. We can project onto them whatever we want, and they're new and they're different and they don't have associations with the past. But, I mean, look, I'm just trying to provide some context for this performance. You know, he was good on the day. He did well for his level, you know?
Yeah, and I think as well people appreciate what he did in the context of the performances of some of the more established players in the team. You know, Mesut Ozil was not great, Xhaka was poor, Mkhitaryan was lightweight. You know, we didn't get a great deal of service to Aubameyang. So I can understand why people are saying, well, look, Guendouzi is you know, he's not the big problem. It's the performances of the other players around him. So, I mean, do you think that will have been instructive to Unai Emery, the way that some of his other players played? I mean, Xhaka, for example, can we use the excuse that he's only back last week and hasn't had a full preseason? I mean, there's a whole pile of questions about Xhaka. You know, should we have sold him? All this kind of stuff. I know it's only one game of the season, but it's one game on top of two seasons that came before this. You know, people have serious doubts.
It's tempting, isn't it, to read into Emery's substitutions. I mean, it's tricky because he brought off Ramsey and then he brought off Xhaka, and they're both players who have had sort of fitness concerns going into the game.
Also, yeah, Ramsey had a calf, and also Xhaka was on a yellow card. So those two things could have been part of his decision-making. But I think you're right to look at the substitutions. Arsene Wenger would not have made those substitutions. Guendouzi would have come off. If he'd started him, he would have been the guy to come off.
Yeah, it was interesting to see the timing of the substitutions being a little bit different to what we're used to under Arsene Wenger and the personnel. You know, there was no deference to seniority, certainly in those changes. And Arsene Wenger would not have made those changes at all. You're right, it would have been Guendouzi who came off. So that was interesting. I mean, the midfield was a problem yesterday. And when you look ahead to Chelsea and you think, well, where can changes be made? I mean, that's the first area that you'd look at, isn't it? And think, well, what can we fix in there? I mean, Lucas Torreira, obviously, is likely to come in. But Xhaka was poor yesterday. I mean, Guendouzi could have expected a lot more support from someone who is one of Emery's five captains and one of the senior players. And
yeah,
I guess he's just really, we've known this for a long time, but he struggles when pressed, doesn't he? He doesn't cope well in tight spaces.
Would it also be fair to say that Granit Xhaka is a guy who finishes seasons more strongly than he starts them?
Based on what we've seen, definitely that's true. Yeah,
so that's a factor, and maybe that's something Unai Emery has to contend with. It was interesting hearing. Go on.
I was just going to say, as for Ramsey, I was interested by that role that he played. It reminded me, I said this in my post-match video, but it reminded me a little bit, and I don't like saying this name, but it reminded me a little bit of the role Dele Alli plays for Spurs. There was like a thud there, and I thought it was you just like passing out
just
in the ground.
It was the front door.
And I thought it was you like I've killed you by saying Dele Alli on the podcast. It was almost like a sort of second striker role, wasn't it? It was really high up the pitch, far higher than we're accustomed to seeing him. And at times, again, it's one of those things where, well, clearly that's something Emery wants, but there were times yesterday when you felt we could have done with him dropping back in a bit more to help out Xhaka and Guendouzi because they weren't coping particularly well.
Yeah, true. So look, let's talk a little bit about the defensive side of our game, which was suspect. Which will come as no surprise to anybody. You know, we expressed defensive concerns before the game. We did our season preview, and all four of us who wrote the season preview for Arseblog were worried about our defence. Ainsley Maitland-Niles at left back suffered a really torrid time against Mahrez and against Kyle Walker, two very fast, very tricky individuals. I, for one, was a little bit disappointed that Unai Emery didn't seem to do much about it during the game. And B, our new defensive leader, the 30-year-old Greek international Sokratis, he talked about how he was going to be a leader, how he was going to help the young players, the young defenders. To me, he looked like a guy absolutely and utterly focused on his own performance, because it was a challenge for him. And he didn't really do an awful lot to help Maitland-Niles out in terms of telling him what he should do. I mean, Gary Neville said it on commentary. The minute that Stefan Lichtsteiner came on, he got close straight away to whether it was Mahrez or Walker, whereas Maitland-Niles was dropping off and he was not being given an awful lot of cover. They were able to bypass him with some quick passing, some one-twos and what have you, whereas Lichtsteiner got close. I think he clattered Mahrez after about 2 minutes.
He did,
just to let him know he was there, which is fine. But, you know, that comes from years and years of experience of playing as a fullback, normally on the right, but, you know, you can transition over to the left. Same principles apply generally. And we look more defensively solid when he came on, which I don't suppose is surprising given he's an experienced international defender with all those games under his belt. But I thought it was a little disappointing that we didn't really help out Maitland-Niles there. He went off with an injury, which we're not sure whether it's serious or not. I saw somebody say that he was on crutches after the game, which could be precautionary. But, you know, that's a worry as well, that if we are going to be focused defensively, we need the experienced guys and the coach to be able to deal with situations in game. And we didn't do that yesterday until we brought Lichtsteiner on.
No, I mean, it was quite... I felt for Maitland-Niles with what he was up against. He had Mahrez coming inside and then Walker on the outside. We took up Maitland-Niles' athleticism, his speed and his power, but Walker was something else on that flank. I mean, he really is an extraordinary athlete.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was a really difficult one. And Socrates is playing in that channel as well, on that side, and that is exactly where you want him to be instructing a young player, providing support, providing a little bit of on-field coaching almost. But, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's early days for his English. It's difficult to know, isn't it? But he certainly didn't take that role yesterday. And when Lichtsteiner came on, I noticed him go through Mahrez straight away.
Yeah.
Just you know, immediately asserting, look, this isn't going to be an easy ride anymore. And even if Maitland-Niles is fit for next week, I think Lichtsteiner played himself into the team, didn't he? I thought he was very good, actually, at left back.
Yeah, so did I. I mean, some of the crossing wasn't great, but he got forward well, he overlapped well. You know, things didn't work for us in the final third yesterday. Aubameyang and Ozil weren't on the same wavelength at all. Unfortunately, Ozil's touch and, you know, there were a couple of moments where he really could have done better. The bad pass from Ederson, he took a really heavy touch. He should have scored there. That would have made it 2-1 with 5 or 6 minutes to go. And you never know, set piece or something. But there was another cross. I think it could have been from Lichtsteiner to Ozil. He just miskicked it. You know, it was a decent half chance there. But yeah, we looked an awful lot more solid. I was looking at the goals again. I was looking at the goals, yeah. Both of them. And I think Bellerin and Guendouzi could have done better with Sterling for the first one. And I think Cech was pretty much unsighted. But if you look at both goals, the ball basically skims Sokratis on both occasions. It just goes by him ever so slightly. And I wonder, for the second one, I think he could have and should have closed it down much quicker. Lichtsteiner lost Bernardo Silva. He took his eye off him for half a second, and it gave him the room to find the shot. But I don't think it was particularly aggressive defending by Sokratis. You know, he talked about what an aggressive defender he is. And it's not just about, you know, being a cunt to the attackers and kicking them. Being an aggressive defender means you close the ball down aggressively. You put yourself and your body on the line to stop shots and what have you. And I thought just his reaction times to both the goals was a bit of a worry for me. It was like he just stood there for both of them.
Yeah, I think you are bang on there. I mean, I watched particularly that second goal. He's so close to it. And he doesn't, it's not like he turns his back or anything or doesn't want to get the block in. He's just not quick enough out to it.
And he doesn't move. He just doesn't move.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you've got to close that space. So, yeah, I see your point there. I mean, it was just a difficult performance to analyse from him, I felt, because it was quite contained, like you say. I mean, there was that, he committed that foul, didn't he, on the edge of his own box, which I haven't seen that on a replay, actually. I only saw that live. But at the time, I was like, well, probably necessary. It felt like City were probably going to get away something there.
Not a bad foul.
Not a bad foul. You'd take that one. But, no, I mean, it's early days, but it wasn't a brilliant debut. But then we've seen good debuts from Arsenal defenders and ultimately been misled. So.
Yeah. Yeah, look, it is one game, and these are just observations based on one game. So that's kind of what we're here to do, to talk about what we see and what we saw yesterday. So we're not making any sweeping judgments about the players or the system or anything like that. We're just talking about this one game, just to make that very clear. Overall, you know, were there positives? Was it a positive that we stuck with that system, even though it was so difficult to play with it? What would you take away from the game as positives for Unai Emery to work with ahead of next week's game?
I guess that I felt that we did improve. I don't know if that's whether just Manchester City were so in control by that point they allowed us a little bit more possession, a little bit more attacking threat. But I felt like in the second half we were more equipped to deal with them, and I felt that we were better. Not good enough to really make a dent in them, but we improved a little bit across the course of the 90 minutes. I felt we were more dangerous once Lacazette came on.
Yes.
Certainly. I thought he had a pretty good afternoon. It was a good afternoon for him, let's put it like that. I thought he showed his value to the team, and he offered us, in a very different way to someone like Olivier Giroud, a bit of a focal point. He could hold the ball, and he showed some nice touches doing that. So that's an intriguing one, isn't it? Because that's been a big discussion point all through pre-season. You know, Aubameyang versus Lacazette or both. I think yesterday showed that there will be times where Emery deploys both those tactics within the same game.
Perhaps. Yeah, I thought that was...
I'm not necessarily convinced he'll start, for example, next week, Lacazette. I don't know.
I would be tempted. I would be tempted. And I'll come back to you. I think we've got a question in part two, but I did think we were better when he came on. I thought the second half, even though City, I'm not going to say they were in second gear or anything like it. I think, you know, we struggled really to create too much, but we did have some chances when Lacazette came on. There was one he put wide, and I think if he'd been Mesut Ozil, there was a pass on for Mesut Ozil there. You know, Ozil was a bit unhappy at not getting the pass. There were half chances. I think we could have had a penalty, really. I think Mustafi was fouled in the box by, could have been Mendy, midway through the second half. It could have been just after they scored their goal. And if you get a penalty at 2-1, then who knows? And I think in general we looked much better, not much better, but certainly better in the second half than we did in the first. So I think there are some small building blocks there for Unai Emery, and hopefully he can figure something better out for Saturday's game against Chelsea, because that's another really tough one.
I mean, if you want a basic positive, I thought we were better in this game, although we weren't great, than we were probably in either of those defeats last season. You know, the Capital One Cup final and the awful game that followed that.
Yeah.
So I thought we were marginally better than those two. So there you go.
Okay, well, there we go. Look, it's the first game. I don't think anybody is too bent out of shape because we lost. Nobody was really expecting us to win yesterday. We knew it was going to be difficult. It was difficult. We can see now what a big job Unai Emery has got to do. It's a huge job on his hands to get this team playing the way he wants. And look, we'll hope for better on Saturday against Chelsea. But for now, we're going to take a break. We're going to go into part two and take your questions right after this.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is the part of the show where we answer questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Facebook page, facebook.com/thearsblog. So, will I go first?
Go on then.
Okay, I'm going to go first. And this comes from Liam, who's at Footy Liam. And he says, Gary Neville said it will take 2 to 3 transfer windows before Emery gets the squad sorted. Do you agree? And how many windows do you think we need to find the right balance?
Ooh, good question. I definitely think it, well, I don't think we quite found it this summer. I think we did okay. But I think there were gaps. And I think that the squad is a little bit imbalanced in some respects. So I think, yeah, I think we certainly need, given how difficult it is to buy in January, I think we probably need next summer too for Emery to have his squad. And I also think that the other reason for that is simply that he needs to have a look at these players. You know, increasingly it's becoming apparent that he's got a very defined idea of how he wants to play, and it's almost impossible to predict which of the existing Arsenal players will respond positively to that and fit well into that model.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a little bit of time for him to understand that and for us to understand that.
Yeah. I do wonder, were the players that we bought this summer or identified from quite early on, because we knew we were signing Lichtsteiner early, we knew that Bernd Leno was the Sven Mislintat pick for goalkeeper, we knew we were getting Socrates. I wonder, were they just picked because they were players in the positions that we needed, or were they players that were going to come in and play in those positions that we needed, but also in the style that we wanted the new coach, or we knew that the new coach was going to play, you know? I feel like, I think that's true what Gary Neville says about 2 or 3 transfer windows, and I would probably err more towards 3 than 2. But I think as well that Unai Emery has got to have a significant input into the players that we bring in. And I'm not sure, I'm not convinced that the players we brought in this summer were Unai Emery picks as much as they were Sven Mislintat picks. You know, he's the head of recruitment. That's what we brought him in to do. That's his job. He's done his job. I mean, Gazidis and Raul Sanyehi are there, but they're there to get the deals over the line and make sure they happen. It's Mislintat's job to identify the players. And I think he's got, if we really want to make this a success, he's got to work in tandem with the head coach rather than making decisions about which players we bring in and then telling the head coach, this is who you've got to work with. I think that's okay to an extent if you're working with, doing it the Real Madrid way, where you're bringing in superstar players and really great players and saying, look, here's a collection of fucking great players. Make it work, Zidane. And Zidane kind of did, you know, in the Champions League sense, not so much in the 38-game league sense, but in the Champions League he did because he had that quality. Whereas I think with Arsenal, because we've got to improve, we really do need to make improvements across the team. I think it needs to be a bit more coordinated.
I think so. And I think, you know, given that there's a few months between now and the next transfer window, and obviously the next summer's transfer window, that relationship between Sven and Unai is going to be absolutely crucial, isn't it? I mean, they have to collaborate. And that was the great success of Emery's Sevilla side, was that he had Monchi and they were a perfect team. You know, Monchi brought the players in and they've suited Emery's style, and they had a shared vision of the way they wanted the team to play. It requires buy-in from all parties, and it requires Sven to, you know, put his own interests and his own contacts maybe not before Emery's needs and Emery's preferences. So I do think we are a work in progress. And if yesterday served any real purpose, it was to remind us quite how much work there is to do. You know, we looked a long, long way off Manchester City, and we look at this stage probably a little bit away from a top four team. So we've got a few months obviously to get that together, and the season, you know, gives us time to do that. But we are a work in progress, make no mistake about it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we definitely are. We definitely are. Which is why I think, you know, for all the opprobrium aimed at people like Granit Xhaka yesterday, I think we do have to give all of them a bit more time. You know, we can't really leap to any significant conclusions after one game of the season. You know, if we're 6 months down the line and players are performing either very well or very poorly, then I think we're in a position to make a judgment about how they suit this team with Unai Emery. But, you know, as ever, I think there's a need maybe to just to step back and not go to extremes just yet.
Just a question sort of on the recruitment. Actually, this isn't a question. It's more of a statement from Arsenal Prince, who's at classified_music. And Arsenal Prince says, every English Premier League champion has played at least one active winger. Ozil needs more options to pass to up front. Only Aubameyang in front is limiting. Manchester City's secret weapon is their wingers. They make life easy for their striker and playmaker. Please get this to the boss. And then he's tagged Unai Emery. So good, the good news is that Unai Emery has seen that message. But did you problem solved.
Yeah.
But did you think the lack of width or in the final third was a bit of an issue yesterday?
I'm not sure it was an issue yesterday. It might be an issue throughout the season. You know, it would be great to have an exciting wide player, wouldn't it? Like Amarez, like Leroy Sané, somebody like that. I'd like to see us with that kind of a player, but you know, we haven't made that a priority in this transfer window. And we're going to have to either find a solution from inside the club, whether it's Reece Nelson or playing Aubameyang out left, in order to give us something a bit different. But we're not going to have that player between now and January, so I don't really see the point in bemoaning that week in, week out. I'm not sure really that was the difference either between us and Manchester City yesterday, you know?
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it than that, I suspect.
Mm.
Have you got a question?
Oh, have I got a question? Well, you didn't ask a question. You just read out a statement.
Oh, I just read a statement. Oh, yeah. Okay. Here's a question. Darren Arsenal at Darren Arsenal 1. And Darren says, quite simply, a bit aside from what happened in the game, I guess, should Ramsey have been sold in the transfer window?
It's a really, really difficult question to answer. Because if Aaron Ramsey has no intention of signing a new deal, then yes, he should have been sold. The question is, do the club have any idea whether he has no intention of signing a new deal or not? We know that they've offered him a lot. We know they've offered him a lot, and he hasn't accepted it. And if you were being absolutely ruthless, you would have put a deadline on the Ramsey thing, and you would have put a deadline on the Danny Welbeck thing, and you would have said either you sign by the end of June or you're getting sold and we'll go out and we'll replace you. That's if you were being really ruthless and that's the way you wanted to run the football club. My sense is with Ramsey is that they're hoping he'll do what Ozil did and sign, whether it's sometime between now and January or sometime in January, you know. Maybe they think it's just a negotiating position. My feeling is that it's not. My feeling is that Aaron Ramsey will run out his contract. And I think the club have taken a gamble on him there. And we're potentially leaving 35, 40 million pounds on the table by taking that gamble. And that's just my gut feeling. It's not based on inside information or anything like that. And if he signs, and if he's a player that Unai Emery wants to keep, and Unai Emery can fashion a really good midfield with Aaron Ramsey in it, I'm absolutely on board with that. But we're not a good selling club. It comes back to that for me. We're not a good selling club, both, you know, in terms of how we deal with situations like Ramsey and Welbeck, two guys that are in the final 12 months of their contract and could go for free. So even between the two of them, we could have got, what, 15 million for Danny Welbeck this summer?
I'd like to think so. If Danny Ings,
something like that. Know, yeah, exactly.
Going for 20.
You know, so 35, 30 million for Ramsey. So there's 50 million quid that we could stick back in the team that we're not going to have. So that's the proviso for me. If he's not going to sign, yes, he should have been sold. And maybe if we were going to be a bit more ruthless about how we manage player contracts, and I think we should be in the future, to be perfectly honest, I don't think we can keep doing this with players reaching the final 12 months of their contract. We just can't. So we've got to put some new procedures in place where if a guy has got to the final 2 years of his contract and we've made offers and he's not signing, the very latest we should sell him is the summer that he's heading into his final year. If not, you sell him with 2 years on his contract, you get better money for him, and you reinvest.
Yeah. Well, that line in the sand has to be drawn eventually. And for me, given all the other upheaval at the club this summer was as good a time as any to do it. So based on that, I think I have to say, should Aaron Ramsey have been sold? I probably would argue yes, just because we've left ourselves so vulnerable at this point, and we've shown once again that we're a club that can be slightly bullied in these contractual negotiations. It feels like a weak decision. You know, I remember when it was Alexis and Ozil, the club trying to make the case that the strong thing to do was to keep the player and hold him to his contract. But when that costs you 50 million quid, it's very difficult to justify that. I mean, Ramsey as a player and I like him as a guy, and I'm glad he's with us this season, don't get me wrong. But from like a business point of view, I think that we should have been more decisive about it this summer, given that he didn't want to sign, that there was only one decision to take.
Yeah, you know, and you look back then at the Alexis and the Ozil situations, and what did that cost us? Was that a good way of doing business? You know, we swapped Alexis for Mkhitaryan. We didn't get any transfer fee for him when we could have got a transfer fee for him in the summer. And we dropped a huge, huge salary on Mesut Ozil, who is a player I like, but I don't think he's given us value yet for that wage packet, right? I don't think that's an unreasonable position to take. So those two situations were not managed very well from an Arsenal point of view. They've been managed perfectly by both players because they both got massive wage increases. Sanchez, he doesn't give a fuck where he plays, really. No. But he knew at 29 years of age he's going to go and get a big load of money from somewhere. He got it from United. The figures, you see the figures doing the rounds last week?
Daniel Taylor published them in The Guardian, I think.
What is it? 380 like grand a week with a 71,000 appearance fee. And fuck, Jesus Christ.
There was a signing on fee on top of that, which was over £1 million a season that he gets paid as a signing.
Yeah, you know, so the people who made out really well from those situations were Sanchez and Ozil, and Arsenal did not.
No, and Ramsey's just following their example.
Yeah.
And why would you not? You know, I suppose it's his own personal interest. But that's why I really believe the club needed to take a stronger position on this than they have. And one suspects that whatever happens with Ramsey will cost us again, either that he will leave either in January or the summer for a reduced fee or nothing, we'll end up paying him more money than perhaps we should.
Yeah. I mean, it's already cost us money because we won't get anything like a reasonable transfer fee for a player of his talent, even if he goes in January. So, we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see. Right, here's a question from Paul Gross, just speaking of Mkhitaryan. He says, what's the best way to use Mkhitaryan? I feel he'll be wasted at Arsenal as he was at United because to get the best out of him, he really should be picked at number 10, and he's unlikely to be picked ahead of Ozil. Even Ozil wasn't played at number 10 yesterday. But what's your thoughts on Mkhitaryan?
It's tricky, isn't it? He's kind of in a lot of sort of people's pre-season 11s, you know, their best 11s that they were putting out, he was kind of the odd man out, someone who wasn't a guaranteed starter. And I can see why, because he's kind of a halfway house. He's sort of a number 10 and he's sort of a wide player, but he's not absolutely one or the other. I wonder if his future might lie a little bit deeper, maybe, you know, more as like a kind of a number eight, just because I feel like maybe he lacks the pace to really, you know, to do, for example, the job that Sterling does for Manchester City as a kind of wide forward. I feel like he doesn't have the sprint speed to do that. But he wasn't good against City, I think it's fair to say.
My feeling is that he's a player who you use against the more mediocre opposition that you face during the season. I think he will be a really effective player against them, but I feel like he's lightweight when we play the likes of City and United and Chelsea. I wouldn't pick him against Chelsea.
It felt like there was an athleticism gap yesterday. Did you feel that? I just felt like, given that all the talk in the pre-season had been, well, Arsenal players didn't go for the World Cup, you know, so they should be in top shape. I looked at City and I just thought, they look quicker, they look stronger, and they look fitter. They're a very powerful team, aren't they, as well as very technically able.
Yeah, there was a really good illustration of that, actually, in the build-up to the second City goal, where City worked the ball out from the back. Aubameyang comes across. I can't remember who he's trying to muscle off the ball, but he basically, it could have been Fernandinho, but he basically bounces off him. They play the ball inside to Gundogan. Mkhitaryan gives a half-hearted chase, doesn't really get anywhere near him, and then they work the ball down the left-hand side and score the goal. So, yeah, there was a gap there in terms of the physicality. Maybe not so much the fitness, but strength is an area that we could improve on for sure. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? The improved musculature of some of our players, but it really wasn't evident yesterday.
Yes, yeah, and I mean, how realistic it is for that to have changed in sort of 6 weeks, I don't know. But what are we talking about, Mkhitaryan, lightweight? Yeah, and also, I guess, against other opposition where Arsenal have more of the ball, he might become more useful. You know, he's someone who you can imagine him combining well with the likes of Ozil and Ramsey to unpick defences when they sit deeper against us. But that isn't really the problem that we had against Manchester City. So, you wouldn't pick him against Chelsea. Would you pick... Well, actually, I've got a question about this. Let's move on to that. Where is it? That is the question. Oh, I had it and I lost it. It's back again. Richard Svanholm, who's at Rickard... Oh, it's Rickard, not Richard. Sorry, Rickard. Rickard Svanholm on Twitter says, who are your ins and outs for the 11 against Chelsea?
It depends on Monreal, I guess. If Monreal is fit, I suppose he would come in at left back.
Mm-hmm. He would be a big bonus, actually. I mean, you know, when you're talking about playing out from the back, he is someone who really does have the ability to do that.
Mm. There's another question here that I have, actually. It comes from, he's called Genduzi plus 10. He's at @Digo_Silva. And he says, would you drop Xhaka so we can play a 4-2-3-1 with Torreira and Ramsey at midfield and Ozil where he plays his best in the number 10 position? I think I would be slightly tempted by that. I think I could be.
It paid some dividends in the second half. I just wonder if this Ramsey thing, if it's important to Emery, if it's how he wants to do it, I wonder if it's worth another go, against a team who aren't quite as good as City.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would drop Mkhitaryan. The question then is whether away from home you can go with Lacazette and Aubameyang, or if you brought in somebody like Alex Iwobi, who has had some good performances. There was one last season maybe at Stamford Bridge, was there?
It was Stamford Bridge in a 0-0.
I think that came after the walloping we got from Liverpool, wasn't it, right at the start? So we had to consolidate and put in a performance. So he could be an option if we're looking to be a bit more defensively solid. He is hardworking. You know, he's got the physicality as well to cope with some of what Chelsea do. But certainly I wouldn't play Mkhitaryan based on what we saw from him yesterday at home. I'd have Torreira in the midfield. Would I play Guendouzi? I don't think I would. I mean, I like his character. I like his willingness. I just feel like maybe we're not doing him a service by playing him in these games, you know?
Yeah, I'm kind of inclined to agree, although the alternatives aren't massively appealing, are they?
No.
I mean, Xhaka was really poor against City.
Mm.
But like you say, you know, maybe he takes some time to get going. So by May, it'll be great. So ins and outs. I mean, I don't think... I'd be tempted by going with Aubameyang and Lacazette. I think that that's something that Emery will deploy against weaker opposition. I'm not sure he would do that against Chelsea. It just seems to me that there's a bit of an understanding between them. They seem to sort of light up a bit when they have each other to play off, almost wherever they are on the field.
And, yeah.
You know, there's a bit of spark to that. And that doesn't quite exist yet between Ozil and Aubameyang, does it? You know, you think Aubameyang's the ideal forward for Ozil to be paired with, but even last season, we haven't necessarily seen that partnership burst into life yet.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, for somebody like Ozil with the vision to have a player like Aubameyang ahead of him with that pace and that movement, you would have thought that's the absolute perfect foil for him. So yeah, it is a bit disappointing that they haven't quite clicked yet. But you know, again, it's one game, and yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Whose question is it? Is it mine?
I think so. Yeah.
All right, this is one from Darren Ambrose, who says, all this propaganda about focusing on defence and hard work, did anyone actually see any difference in the way that we defended?
A difference. Well, yes, I saw a difference in the way we play without the ball. You know, there was the whole Ramsey leading the press thing was kind of new. In terms of the way we defended as a back four, I'm just trying to think, really. Not massively, did you?
No, but I mean, what could we do that much differently, you know? Particularly against a team like City, you know, there was no chance for us really to win the ball high up the pitch. If you push your centre-halves forward, they're just going to go in behind you. As we saw for that chance for Aguero, we'd all pushed up for a free kick and they broke quickly and, you know, got in behind. So I think it's going to take some time. I think yesterday's back four was not reflective of what Emery will do because he didn't have an established left back. I do wonder in hindsight if maybe starting Lichtsteiner there would have been a better idea than Maitland-Niles, because actually I'd forgotten about Lichtsteiner completely. Because when Maitland-Niles was going off, I was going, well, fuck, what are we going to do? How are we going to do that? Is he going to bring Holding on and put Mustafi at right back? I'd completely forgotten about him, even in the build-up to the game. So, I mean, it's going to take time for him to get his defence working the way he wants. I think the protection that the back four are given from midfield is going to be really, really important, which is why I think Torreira needs to start against Chelsea. I don't know if you noticed yesterday, there was one bit where Chelsea or City broke forward. They were coming forward and Torreira, he didn't go to the ball, but he ran into space and made an interception based on where he thought the pass was going to go, which I thought was really quite interesting. And that's the sort of protection that the back four might get from midfield, which might cut out some of the other stuff. I mean, there was another moment where City were running at us and Socrates was basically running away from the ball. I didn't quite get what he was trying to do there. So I think it'll take time for the midfield to be balanced properly to protect the back four. And that's where I think the main difference in our defending will come from.
You hate to heap too much pressure on Torreira, but it does feel like there is significant pressure on Torreira, basically, to resolve a lot of these issues. And he does, on paper, have the right criteria, the right attributes. But, you know, it will be fascinating to see how much difference he can make. I do think Lichtsteiner should start next week if Monreal's not ready. And I think in future, maybe he's shown he is the guy for backup left back. I enjoyed when he was coming on, Emery was kind of giving him a lot of instructions vocally, and it was very loud at that point in the stadium. New season, 60,000 fans, and Lichtsteiner was just kind of nodding back at him. You know, he was almost like he was saying, "Yeah. I know how to play fullback."
Yeah, and he
went on and he sort of showed that.
Yeah,
and that's the advantage you have, isn't it, of signing a pro like that? I mean, Keshav Kapoor, said, "Did you enjoy Lichtsteiner's shithousery when he came on yesterday?" And I can imagine that is sort of to your taste the way that he went.
I really liked the fact that he clattered into Mahrez a couple of minutes after coming on, because, you know, it's that classic old grizzled fullback thing with a winger. It's like, okay, here you go, I'm here, try run past me now, because, you know, you're going to get some of this. And I'm not sure if Mahrez was quieter or not after that. My feeling is that he was. Maybe that's just some confirmation bias on my part, but it felt like he sort of put him back in his box a little bit. I wasn't mad for the incident in the box where he claimed to have been, you know, headbutted or whatever it was. Two heads came together, himself and Laporte, I think it was. And it was just two defenders, you know, rutting like old stags, but, you know, there was no need to make such a big song and dance of it. I don't think that was particularly good. But, you know, I'm all for a bit of experience. I'm all for a bit of shithousery. I'm all for a bit of cynicism, because I think these could be important factors for us this season. You know, when we are trying to improve, when we're trying not to get exposed, you know, it's taking that yellow card on the halfway line. It is clattering into a guy and letting him know you're there. You know, and if the guy is that kind of a character where he doesn't fancy it as much, then you're kind of doing your job. I'm not saying break a guy's leg or anything, but, you know, be a bit physical. Remind him that he's in a bit of a scrap, you know, which we haven't done often enough in recent years. You know, when you think about Wenger's best teams, they were full of physical players, intimidating physical players. Like even Dennis Bergkamp, as amazing a footballer as he was a nasty bastard at times. Ask Steve Lomas, getting an elbow in the face. You know, was it great for us to be without Dennis Bergkamp for 3 games? No, but what's the impact of that in general when a team feels or an opposition feels like, oh, well, this guy could do me? Do you get as close as you're going to get if you're not afraid of him? You know, there's something to be said for that side of the game that we haven't had. So if he's there to do a bit of that, then fine. And if he can teach some of the other players to do a bit of that, fine. And you know what else I noticed yesterday? Lacazette got really stuck in. Really well and truly stuck in. He was penalised a few times by the referee. I think by the third time people were going crazy because I thought he'd made a couple of really good tackles, but the referee gave free kicks. But, you know, that kind of thing. Be a bit physical. Put yourself about. You're a fucking big, strong guy. You know, we don't have to tippy-tap around the opposition. It's all well and, you know, show them some respect. That's fine. But they're not your mates for 90 minutes. They're not your mates. And you can be physical without being violent. And I think that's probably something we need to be, because there is a gulf in quality in terms of personnel, and there are ways that you can make that up, and that's one of them. I'm not saying it's the only way to do it. I'm not saying it's going to solve all our problems, but it won't hurt us, provided we don't get, you know, players sent off all over the place. But that's not what I'm talking about either.
No, and when you look at the new signings, you know, Lichtsteiner, Sokratis, Torreira, they all potentially have that element to their game, that they are prepared to be physical and get involved with that contact. So let's hope we see that coming out in the next few weeks.
Okay, I think it's your question.
Is it? I don't know if I've got one. Hang on, let me have a look. We've covered so much stuff.
We really have.
Well, what about... That didn't sound very good, did it?
Yep.
Thanks for all these hundreds of questions, guys. Jay Burl says, did you notice the class of Mikel Arteta not celebrating the City goals?
No, I didn't, and I didn't give a fuck.
I obviously wasn't watching it on telly, so maybe I've got a different perception of it. But I felt like the Arteta narrative, given that he was so close, reportedly, to becoming our Arsenal manager earlier in the summer, it wasn't a hugely overplayed part of proceedings yesterday. It was kind of, oh yeah, there he is. It wasn't a big deal. Was that how it was represented on telly?
Yeah, I think so. I didn't really pay very much attention to it, to be honest. Maybe they showed some close-ups of him or whatever, but... fuck, he's just a guy doing his job. He could have got the job with us. He didn't get the job with us. He's got a great job at Manchester City. Good for him. You know, I don't know why everything has to be a fucking Love Island fucking drama type thing. You know? Don't have to have a soap opera out of every fucking little thing.
That's true, especially when, you know, ultimately for a lot of these guys, it is just business, you know? He's just doing his job.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Have you got any more questions?
Not really, because I think we've pretty much covered everything. I'm just flicking through them here. Jim Carrey's dad, who's at Not Jim Carrey's Dad, says, which one of you would make the best wizard? I think it'd be you.
Why? I'm really happy with that, but why?
I just feel like you're better at costumes and stuff like that. So I could see you with the hat and the robes and, you know, your magic wand. You know, I'm not saying there's a touch of Harry. Was Harry Potter a wizard?
Something like that.
Was he?
That's one word for it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, he. Yeah, I mean, I guess I could be a wizard. I found out that This I used to be called the Wizard. Do you know this? So I found out when I was at university.
Okay.
When I was at university, I bumped into this girl shortly after I left university, and she was someone I had a bit of a crush on actually. And she said to me, "Oh, I remember you from university. Everyone used to call you the Wizard." And I was like, "That sounds brilliant." I was like, "What's going on here?" So I said, "Oh, what do you mean? Why did they call me the Wizard?" And they were like, "Because." Whenever you were talking, you do that thing with your hands when magicians are moving the cups. And I was like, oh, that's not as cool as I thought. I just had like little dinosaur hands moving around all over the place. So yeah, I would be the better wizard maybe.
Okay. I think you would. I'd hand that one to you. I'm not sure that would be my forte. So James is the better wizard. I do have one very final one here. I'm not sure if this is true or not. But Ryan Barber... who's at Ryan Barber 25 says, "Why was James slumped down on the floor of the stadium concourse yesterday during halftime? Was it really that bad of a performance? What was this you, James? Were you slumped down on the stadium concourse?"
That was me, I'm afraid. Yeah,
oh
that was
God.
Me.
What were you doing?
Do you want to know what I was doing? I was writing the ESPN. Player ratings. I was starting some work on those on my phone half time in the concourse. So I was sat on the floor tapping away on my phone. I don't know if it was Ryan who came up to me and said hello, but I was like, that's not a good place to be recognised, is it? Sat on the floor of a dirty concourse. But there you go. That was the explanation. I was also quite excited going into the game, and halftime was a bit of a reality check. So maybe it was an emotional moment.
I do like that you're staying on brand, you know, slumped on the floor. Was it outside the toilets?
Sorry, I wasn't wearing a tracksuit. That's all I can say.
Was it outside one of the toilets or anything?
It was opposite the toilets. Yeah, don't worry. At least it wasn't in the toilet. At least it wasn't like, why was James sat in a urinal at halftime?
Because
I was working, guys, obviously.
We've got a whole season for you to park your butt in the fucking urinal.
I'll do that, you know. If it's worse at halftime, that's where you'll find me.
Okay, well, we look forward to that. We will look forward to the Chelsea game this weekend at Stamford Bridge on the Arsecast on Friday, so please feel free to join us for that. You know where to find it. It'll be available first thing Friday morning. We'll be here all week with all the Arsenal news, and as ever, thank you for listening. Thanks for being with us for another season. Here we go again, folks. It's going to be another journey, another trip, I think. Let's hope it's a fun one. Until the next one, cheers.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.